fixed it in the brain, like a tumor, poisoning everything around it. I saw all through him, just like that. He's got two kids, two beautiful daughters. He's suddenly very, very worried about the world they'll grow up in. He's Catholic, wears a gold cross around his neck. But today he's taken it off, put it in his pocket. He keeps sticking his hand down there and rubbing it between his fingers. He thinks the end of the world is coming. It's not that I could read the cop's mind. I couldn't. I just read his face. We all can tell by the look in somebody's eyes that they don't think our joke is funny, or that they don't like what they're eating, or whatever. It was just like that. The information was there, presented in the subtle play of facial muscles from microsecond to microsecond. He read off more names. Justin White, Fred something, a couple of others. I didn't recognize any of them and told him so. The last name on the list was Jim Sullivan. So Cucumber was right to worry. I didn't tell Morgan I knew the name. In the years since, I've wondered how many lives could have been saved if I had.
You're not out of school even 3 years. You went to high school with most of these people, Eastside, but you knew only one girl.
I kind of kept to myself.
And then you got shipped off to the other school.
Look, I'm not saying anything else until you tell me whether Jennifer is dead or alive. That ain't confidential information, and I deserve to know. Don't bother. He doesn't know.
We don't know. You see, that's the problem. That's why I got 6 hours of overtime already today. At least 9 people were at the one ball at closing time, 12 hours ago. 4 of them are missing. Your friend is here.
He paused, probably for effect.
The rest are dead.
It's funny. Up until that point, despite all the evidence that had been provided to the contrary, it had never hit home how much trouble I was really in. I thought about John, again wondering if I had killed him by not rushing him to the ER. I turned and looked at myself in the one-way mirror. The image was distorted, the other cop out of range at the back of the room. What was left was just me and Morgan, the clean-cut protector of the people, standing tall over the slumped, unshaven kid in a battered video store T-shirt that looked suspiciously like it had been wadded up on a car floorboard for 2 days. Good guy and bad guy, trash man and trash. What about Justin Feingold and the guys John was with? I asked. Kelly and—
They're fine. I've already talked to them, the whole band. They went home before the party moved on. Which brings us to my next question. Your friend is the only known survivor of the one ball in, and— Now don't take offense at this, but he ain't looking too healthy right about now. Did he say anything this morning at work? Maybe while you guys were putting away last night's porno returns?
The white cop across the room stepped forward, his hands on his hips, waiting for an answer. Morgan left his gaze on me, calmly waited for me to fill the tense silence. Old interrogation trick. John called me last night, talking crazy, clearly out of it. Paranoia. Hallucinations, the whole bit. This would have been around 5 a.m. I came over. He was acting, well, crazy. Seeing things. But otherwise okay. Conscious, you know. Not like puking or convulsing or anything. I calmed him down. We went and got some food. That was that. We went to work.
What did he say? Exactly.
Monsters in his apartment. Said he couldn't remember how he got where he was, so on.
Did he say what he was on?
No.
You know we can find out anyway, right? We're not interested in booking a bunch of your raver friends for poppin' pills. To somebody like me, the dead bodies are what matters. And if somebody's selling poison right now as we talk,
no. I'd tell you if I knew. You're a cop. You know I'm telling you the truth. So what? That's how everybody died? Overdose?
This Jennifer Lopez. She was your girlfriend?
No. I thought about repeating my question, then stopped. Instead, I replayed his question in my mind, focused on it, studied every contour of each word, was almost terrified to find I could glean libraries of information from between each syllable. In an instant, I learned volumes by what he didn't say, by the way he breathed, the minute twitch at the corner of his mouth, the slight widening of his left eyelid on the third and fifth word. This detective last ate 7 hours and 15 minutes ago, 2 egg McMuffins and 4 cups of coffee. You can smell it in the oil seeping through his skin. Check out his posture. He hasn't slept in 20 hours. He forces a smoothness into his voice, wants to come across cultured but shrewd. He tells people his hero is Shaft, but it's really Sean Connery's James Bond. In his daydreams, he sees himself hanging off a helicopter in a tuxedo. And then, in a blink, I knew everything he knew. I saw the fate of each of the dead kids from the one ball. Nathan Curry had committed suicide, shot himself in the temple with a little .32-caliber pistol he kept hidden under his bed. Arkham Gibbs took a swim, fully clothed, in his family's swimming pool. They found him floating face down a few hours later. Shelby Winder and another girl, Carrie Saddleworth, were found together, each dead of a massive stroke. Shelby was missing her right hand, the wrist a ragged stump wrapped with a blood-soaked shirt. The rest, Jennifer Lopez, Fred Chu, Big Jim Sullivan, are nowhere to be found. They were all at the one ball with John last night. Now, only John remained. You know all that, but you still can't remember this cop's name? You're teetering on the brink of Crazy Man Bluff overlooking Weird Shit Valley. And to answer your next question, I continued, I didn't know Jennifer well enough to know who her friends were or where she may have run off to. I'm sorry. Detective Freeman stepped forward and flipped open the manila envelope. He fanned out four photographs. One was a mugshot of a young black guy, dreadlocks. I knew this to be my fake Jamaican, knew before my eyes focused on the photo. The next three pictures were vivid splashes of crimson. Once, when I was 12, for reasons that made sense at the time, I filled a blender with some ice cubes and three cans of maraschino cherries. I didn't know you had to use a lid on one of those things, so I hit the button and watched it erupt like a volcano. The room and the cops' photographs looked like the resulting mess in our kitchen that day, everything a red spray with lumps. He pointed to the Jamaican's mugshot.
What about that guy? You know him?
He was there, at the party last night. Whatever John was on, this guy gave it to him, John told me. You already knew that, didn't you, Detective?
That's Bruce Matthews, runs an amateur unlicensed pharmaceuticals operation on the corner of 30th and Lexington.
I nodded toward the red photos. What's that? Morgan pointed to the mugshot.
Before.
He pointed to the three drenched pictures.
After.
The first picture was just lumps on the floor, on carpet that was probably brown at one time, but was now dyed a wet, purplish black. It looked like somebody had tossed down a bucket of raw steaks and chicken bones. The next picture was a close-up of one wall, deep red splatters over half the surface area, occasional bits of meat stuck here and there. The third picture was a close-up of a severed brown hand in a pool of red, fingers curled loosely, a bandage around the palm. I turned my eyes away, suddenly sweating heavily. There was that tableau in the mirror again, just me and Morgan face to face. Did he think I had anything to do with this? Was I a suspect? In my panic, I couldn't read him. He let the silence congeal in the air, staring down on me. He broke me, and I broke the silence. What could even do that to a person? A bomb? Some kind of...
Nothing you know how to do, I'm sure of that. Maybe something not within our bounds of familiarity.
That fear again on Morgan's face, I understood it now. But there's more. Much more. He's buried it so deep even you can't read it. The door opened and the detective's words trailed off. A fat Hispanic cop ducked in and whispered in his ear. Morgan's eyebrows shot up and the two of them left the room. I heard a commotion outside, hurried shouts and feet shuffling on floor tile. After about 10 minutes, Morgan stormed into the room, eyes wide.
No, 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 don't say it.
Your friend is dead.
Click. A tape recorder, clicking off at the end of a cassette. Arnie had apparently set the thing on the table before me at some point. I hadn't noticed. He grumbled an apology, fished out a new tape, and went about changing it. I glanced over at his discarded notebook, saw he had abandoned his note-taking just after the word Holocaust. I pushed away the plate of chicken, rice, and snow peas that was the Flaming Shrimp Reunion. I had been picking through it for the last half hour, leaving the chicken. That bird, I knew, had lived a very sad life, and I couldn't bring myself to eat it. It also had spent its days covered head to toe in bits of other birds' crap.
When you got your cell phone bill, did it list the call you got at Denny's?
What? I'm sorry?
The call you got from your friend at Denny's when your friend was sitting there next to you without a phone? Was that call on your cell phone bill? I never thought to check. The waitress swept by and claimed my plate, dropped off a fortune cookie and my ticket. She ignored Arnie. I held the cookie in my hand, tried to concentrate and see what the fortune said inside it. I found I couldn't. Arnie scratched his head, knitted a question with his eyebrows. So, the black stuff, the soy sauce, it's a drug, right? Well, I'll get to that. And it makes you smarter when you take it? It lets you read minds and all that? Not really. It heightens your senses, I think. I don't know. When you're on it, it's like overload. Like if you hooked your car radio up to one of those interplanetary SETI antennas. You get shit from all over the place. Can see things you shouldn't be able to see. But I don't think it would help you do your taxes. And you still got some of this stuff. He glanced quickly down at the silver canister. I'm getting to that. You're on it right now. That's how you did the thing with the coins and the dream and all that earlier? Yeah, I took some today. It's fading, though. So the effects don't last that long. The side effects don't last that long. The effects will last the rest of my life, I think. Maybe longer. Arnie scratched his forehead. So, the kids that died. This is that rave overdose, right? I remember all that a few years ago, seeing it on CNN. They thought they had gotten hold of some tainted ecstasy or something like that. So, you were the guy that... I can't figure out at what point the party got turned into a rave in the newspapers. There was no techno music or dancing or PVC pants, and there was certainly no raving. Freaking rave. It's one of those words they throw around to scare old people. What color is the interview room down at the precinct? White. It's flaked off in places. Shows institutional green underneath. And if I contact Detective Appleton, he'll remember talking to you. Good luck finding him. Arnie made notes. So, I asked, what do you think?
I think you've probably got a good book here, he said. Flesh it out a little.
A book? Meaning a work of fiction? Meaning it's all bullshit? Arnie shrugged.
It's nothing to me. A story is a story. I'm just a feature reporter, so the fact that you think it happened is my story. But it's like Whitley Strieber writes a book about aliens. Nobody would have heard of it except he sells it as nonfiction, swears to the end that it all really happened.
His eyes flicked over to the little metal canister again. I realized my fingers had been fidgeting with it. Well, I'm not into that whole aliens thing, but I don't think it's right to label a guy a fraud, Arnie.
Exactly.
He's got a nice house, though. His own radio show, played by Christopher Walken in the movie.
Wouldn't you like that?
You know, I don't remember leaving the house with any change in my pocket. You could have slipped those coins to me. Without you feeling it? And the thing with your dream? Come on, Arnie. Gotta love the skeptic, Mom.
I saw a sleight-of-hand artist in Vegas who, as part of his show, would call somebody out of the audience and steal the glasses off their face. No kidding. He'd send the poor sap back to his seat, and he'd be squinting around, trying to figure out why he couldn't see all of a sudden. There's no magic, Mr. Wong, just knowing tricks the other guy doesn't know about.
I stood up. Come with me. I want to show you something. In my truck.
We made our way out to my rattly old Ford Bronco II. I bought it after my old Hyundai got totaled a few years ago in a manner that was undoubtedly unique among all vehicles ever totaled in vehicle history. I approached the rear and dropped the tailgate, revealing a white sheet covering a large box the size of one of those plastic portable dog carriers. Not coincidentally, it was a portable dog carrier.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever seen, Arnie?
He grinned, looking over the box, like a damn kid at Christmas.
Look, everybody! The crazy man carries around a big crazy box. Let's all humor him at once.
One time, he began, I was down in my basement, and there's just a couple of bare light bulbs that hang down, you know. So it's all shadows, and your shadow kind of stretches out across the floor. Anyway, one time, out of the corner of my eye, you know, it sort of looked like my shadow back there was moving without me. I don't mean the bulb was swinging and the shadow was just wavering back and forth. I mean, the limbs were, like,
flailing around, real fast, too. It was just for a second, and like I said, it was just one of those tricks of light you get out at the corner of your eye. But I tell you, I didn't go back down there until it was broad daylight out. Is what you got in there gonna beat that? I need you to get in that mindset, Arnie. We're out here in public with lights on, and the whole world's solid and lined up real neat. But down in that basement in the dark, alone, you believed in things. Dark things. I need you to open yourself up like that. Okay? It was just something I thought I saw. I never said there was anything there, Mr. Wong. Just humor me. Ready? I threw back the sheet. Long pause. Do you see it? No. Or, you know, it's an empty cage. Turn your head so you're looking at me. You should see the box out of the corner of your eye, just like the shadow in the basement. Okay. Arnie's grin was fading. He was losing patience fast. Did you ever go in the bathroom at night, Arnie, and for a second, just a split second, you glimpse something in the mirror other than your reflection? Then you turn the light on, and, of course, everything's fine again. But for just a half a second, maybe while you're leaving the room, you see out of the corner of your eye that it isn't you in the mirror. Or maybe it is you, only changed. And what's looking back at you is something completely different, something not very human. Let's go back inside, okay? Your story was more interesting. You're going to die, Arnie. Someday you will face that moment. Regardless of what you believe, at that moment either you will face complete non-existence, which is something you can't possibly imagine, or you will face something even stranger that you also can't possibly imagine. On an actual day in the future, you will be in the unimaginable, Arnie. Set your mind on that. Silence for a few seconds. Arnie nodded a little. Okay. Now, without turning your head, look at the box. Arnie did, recoiled, yelped, stumbled, and finally fell on his ass. Oh, shit, he gasped. Shit! What the shit is that? Shit! Shit! I threw the sheet back over the box and closed up the Bronco. Arnie scrambled to his feet and backed up 10 steps, halfway to the door of the restaurant. How did you do that? What the fuck was that thing? What the fuck? I don't know what it's called. Pretty freaky, isn't it? You made me see something, something out of my own head. You freaked me out so I would see something. No, it's really there. I'm surprised you saw it so easy. You must have an open mind. Most people don't see it that fast unless they're stoned or drunk. Arnie kept stepping back, muttering. I was in the Navy, diver. I saw some shit. Deep sea shit that didn't look like anything that belonged on this world, but that was nothing, nothing like that thing. I want to tell you the rest of the story, Arnie. I need to get it out. But you need to take it for what it is, the truth. Are you ready to do that? Arnie looked at me with uncertainty, then nodded. Okay. Until I figure it out for real, okay. That'll have to do. After a moment, we walked back toward the restaurant. As we passed through the swinging doors, still painted with the slogan, Hola, amigos, I picked up my story. Anyway, so the cop comes in and tells me John is dead. I was out of my chair before I knew it, halfway to the door. What? How? The cop stopped me cold with a stiff arm to the chest. Now calm down, Morgan said, not looking at all calm himself. He went into a convulsion or something, and his pulse stopped. But now, listen to me here. We got ambulances. They'll be here in 30 seconds. We got Vinny doing CPR on him. Vinny's a lifeguard in his off hours. That boy's in the hands of people who know what they're doing. That don't include you, so you got no business farting around out there getting all hysterical and whatnot. I knocked his hand away from my chest. The white cop dropped his arms and came toward us, though looking a little less shocked than what I would have expected, having had somebody just drop dead in their police station. Apparently, he wouldn't have to fill out the paperwork. Morgan's lips peeled back slightly to reveal gritted teeth. He started to say something, stopped himself. Oh, shit, this guy's on the jagged edge. Here's what you're gonna do, son, he breathed. You're gonna wait here. I'll be back in 5 minutes, and you are gonna start telling me the truth. I am gonna get to the bottom of this, and if you obstruct me, you will live the rest of your days wishing you had not." He stepped back, made sure I wasn't going to rush the door, then turned out of the room. What chilled me wasn't the cop's threats. It was the single, dark thought I could read pulsing through his head. The dead are getting off lucky in this deal. That didn't seem like a normal cop thought to me. I stood there, lost, listening to the confusion of shouts and controlled panic outside. I heard sirens out front. Ambulance. My cell phone chirped. On any other day I would have shut the thing off, but that seemed unwise somehow. I looked toward Officer Liddy, now standing placidly in the middle of the room, and I gestured toward my pocket as if to ask if he minded. He said nothing. I answered my phone. "Yeah."
"Dave, this is John."
"What? Are you alive? In an ambulance or something?"
"Yes and no. Are you still at the police station?"
"Yeah, we were both..."
"Have I died yet?"
A long pause from my end. Yeah, according to the cops. I glanced at the white cop, who showed no interest in my conversation.
"Then there's no time to explain all this. Get out of there."
"But I'll be a fugitive," I whispered, turning away from the cop.
"They know where I..."
"Listen, get up. Walk to the door. Leave the room. Leave the building. Whatever you do, see that big white cop standing there in the room with you? Don't look at him in the mirror."
"Huh?"
I glanced back over my shoulder at the cop. Something was off.
"Just go. Now."
I tried to get a read on the cop and realized that's what was off. Even with the soy sauce, I was getting zero information from the G. Gordon Liddy-looking detective. I turned my head a few degrees to the right. Don't look at the mirror. Don't look at the mirror. To the reflective surface of the two-way mirror directly opposite the cop. It was just you and Morgan in the mirror, Dave, even after the white cop stepped forward. In the mirror, it was just me, standing there, talking on my cell. Alone. I spun toward the cop.
"I don't get it. He's not real Dave, not in the, traditional sense.
He's coming toward me. Go, Dave. You're gonna start seeing things like this from time to time. It's important that you not freak out." The cop was one step away from me now. His mustache twitched as if he was starting to grin underneath it.
"So he, can't hurt me?"
"Oh, I'm pretty sure he can." A hand clenched around my face. The cop's fingers dug into my cheeks, squeezing, rigid as iron bars. I thought my teeth would crack into pieces. He pushed me back, using my face, and slammed me against the wall. I clawed at his arm, but it was like trying to tear the limbs off a bronze statue. I smacked him across the nose with my phone. His mustache twitched again as if this amused him greatly. The mustache kept twitching and twitching, and then one end of it began to curl up and peel off like a man's disguise torn off by a hard wind. Finally, the mustache detached completely, leaving a patch of pink, shredded skin. The thing flapped its halves like bat wings. No, it really did, and flew over and landed on my face. The cop's mustache bit me above the right eyebrow. I slapped at the thing with my left hand and worked my leg up and, with all my strength, shoved a knee into the detective's guts just below the ribs. A jolt of pain shot up my thigh, like I had kneed over a pile of cinder blocks. But I felt him give, pushed back by the force. The mustache bat flittered over to my ear and clamped down, feeling like somebody doing five piercings at once. I slapped at it again, suddenly realized the cop had reeled back and fallen to a knee on the floor. I should have been free of him, but the hand was still around my face. Oh, look at that. His arm came off. The man had a 6-inch bloody hole on one shoulder now. The detached arm, on its own, whipped around my neck and coiled up like a python. No hint of bone in there now, the arm making two loops around until the ragged stump hung under my chin like a meat scarf. I thrashed around, trying to pry the thing off. The arm snake was all muscle, tensed and wiry, slowly squeezing off my windpipe. Colored spots flashed before my eyes, lack of oxygen shorting out the wiring in my brain. I blinked and saw the floor was closer than before. I was on my knees. The mustache bat flitted around my head, taking stinging little bites on my cheek and forehead. It went after my eye, pulling at the lid, and I couldn't get my hands up to swat it away, arms not working right. The meat scarf squeezed tighter.
The whole room got dark. I was on all fours, and I suddenly realized the best idea was just to lay down there on the floor and go to sleep. I detected movement from the corner of my eye. The rest of the cop's body, it was up, walking toward me. Shit! I crawled clumsily toward the door. Gordon reached for me with his remaining arm, and I felt his fingers try to snatch my shirt. I flung myself toward the door, my face banging off it. I reached up, clawing around for the handle. I sucked air through a squeezed windpipe. My head felt like it would pop like a balloon. Don't be locked, don't be locked, don't be locked. The handle turned. I banged open the door with my head and spilled out of the room. And it was over. The thick bundle of arm snake had vanished from my neck, as had the flying mustache. I stood up, saw four guys hustling down the hall with an empty stretcher. I stuck my finger in my mouth. It came out bloody. I looked my cell phone over, saw it had the cracks and busted mouthpiece from its tour as a nose club seconds ago. I cursed at myself, sure that whatever freak-ass cellular conduit I just had with John was now cut off. People rushed past me, and I wanted to push my way through to see what was up with John. Remember John's disembodied instructions. Taking advantage of the chaos, I strolled back through the police station, finally walking right out the front door. I hit the sidewalk, my heart pounding. What now? A fat man in a shiny business suit strode by without a glance my way. Without trying, I realized that he was going to die in just 2 weeks, a heart attack while trying to knock his cat out of a tree with a broomstick. A pretty late-model Trans Am gleamed past, and I noticed from the posture of the driver that the car was stolen and that the owner was dead. The car's fan belt was going to break in 26,931 miles. Man, I gotta focus on one thing at a time, or my brain's gonna melt and run out of my ears like strawberry jam. Fine. I took a deep breath. Now what? My car was 2 miles away at Wally's, and I didn't have cash to waste on a taxi, even if one of the town's three cabs should happen by at this moment. To my surprise, my cell phone rang. I put the broken thing to my ear, realized I owed some props to the engineers at Motorola. Hello? Dave. It's me. John. Where are you right now, Dave? I'm on the sidewalk outside the cop shop, walking. Where are you? Heaven? If you figure it out, let me know. Right now, just keep walking. Go toward the park. Don't freak out. Are you freaking out? I don't know. I can't believe this phone still works. It won't for very much longer. Half a block away, there should be the hot dog guy. Can you see him? I walked a dozen steps, smelled it before I saw it. The cart was plastered with right-wing stickers and had a yellow and orange umbrella hanging over it. The hot dog guy was painfully thin, looked about 160 years old, as much a landmark as this city has. Okay? Buy a bratwurst from him. Questioning this seemed a waste of words. The man and I exchanged $3.15 and a brat wrapped in a hot dog bun and a sheet of wax paper. For a moment, I hesitated, then drew two fat, neat lines of mustard along its length. It seemed like the right thing to do. Cell phone balanced between shoulder and ear, John spoke again, as if underwater, his voice growing fainter by the second. Now, put it up to your head. I looked down at the rivulets of oozing grease, congealing with the now dripping mustard, and was thankful that I didn't use ketchup or that brown hot onion sauce. Glancing around, I tried to be as inconspicuous as possible as I lay the sausage against my ear. Abruptly, my cell phone went dead. A drop of grease dribbled into the dead center of my ear, creeping like a worm down onto my neck and below the collar of my shirt. A group of men and women in business suits walked by, swerving to avoid me. Across the street, a homeless-looking guy was staring at me, curious. Yep, this was pretty much rock bottom. As I was about to reach for a napkin, at least get my money's worth by eating the bratwurst while it was still hot, I heard it. Dave, can you hear me? John's voice, coming clear as day through the tube of seasoned meat. I glanced down at the cell phone and got the point. The display was black, the glass busted out of it. A green circuit board was poking out of the warped seam along one side. All right. All right, I'm hearing you through some kind of psychic vibration or whatever and not the phone. I get it. You could have just told me that. I lowered the sausage and replaced it with a cell. Okay, what's next? Nothing. I heard a faint sound coming from the bratwurst, put it back to my head. Dave, are you there? Yeah, I can't get you through the cell now. You have to talk through the bratwurst from now on. Why? I sighed and rubbed my eyes, feeling a headache coming on. Okay. What do we do? The only reason you can hear me is because you got some of the soy sauce into your system from the syringe. But it's not very much, and it won't last long. What is it, John? The sauce? It was alive, I swear it. Listen, you gotta get over to Robert's place. There aren't any cops there now, but there will be. We have sort of a narrow window here. Take a cab to Wally's and get your car, then go to Shire Village on Lathrop Avenue. It's a trailer park south of town past that one candy place. You should be able to get there in 20 minutes with any luck. I don't have any cash. I had $5 and I just spent 3 of it on the bratwurst. The bratwurst was $3? Holy crap. Okay. Give me a second. All right. Check between the sausage and the bun. You'll find a $100 bill folded up in there. Encouraged that maybe all this black magic could actually produce something positive, I fingered around under the sausage for a few seconds. Nothing here, John. Okay, I guess I can't do that. Do you have your ATM card? Chapter 4. The Soy Sauce. 2 hours later, I pulled my Hyundai into Shire Village. The now cold bratwurst sat on the dash, little smears of mustard on the windshield where the sloppy wax paper contacted it. I put it to my head. John? I was greeted with a burst of static. But then John's voice came in, fainter than before.
Dave.
Yeah.
What, did you drive under a bridge just now?
No, we're at the trailer park, finally. Which one is Robert's? Static again, then.
It's wearing off. Don't talk, just listen. Go inside and...
Static.
And as long as you absolutely remember not to do that, you'll be fine. Good luck.
What? John, I didn't catch the... Dead. The voice was gone. The static was gone. It was just a sausage again. I resigned myself to the hope that whatever I had to do next would be apparent from a look at Robert's place. His trailer was one of only two that had yellow police tape over the porch and door, and the other one looked like it had been abandoned months ago. Meth lab. I parked off in the grass across the lot and walked toward Robert's abode. Nobody was there, or at least nobody who came in a car. I knocked for some reason, then went in. They had cleaned up the blood and guts. I guess that shouldn't have surprised me, since I should have known they wouldn't just let the entrails collect flies for 12 hours. Still, I recognized the room from the photos the cop showed me, the scene of Robert's wet explosion. The carpet was still a few shades off from its original color, and the walls were forever stained a faded reddish-brown. And there was a smell. Awful and organic. Mildew and rotten milk and shit. The walls were stripped bare, no family photos or framed landscapes from Walmart or movie posters. Did the cops do that? No television. A sofa. A chair pocked with cigarette burns. Was he living here or squatting? I glanced into the open kitchenette at one end of the trailer, then turned and walked down a short hallway to the other end. I pushed through a closed door leading to what had to be a bedroom, and stopped. I was suddenly looking out over a snow-dusted field, a range of mountains spiking into a stunning violet sky from the horizon. Not a picture, that's not how it struck me. It was like that end of the trailer had been chainsawed off to reveal the outdoors. Only, if that had really happened, I would have only seen the neighbor's rusty trailer and an abandoned Oldsmobile floating among the weeds. What I saw instead took my breath away. I stepped backward into the hallway, dizzy, disoriented, afraid I would be sucked in somehow. It took almost a minute to realize what I was looking at. It was a painting, a floor-to-walls-to-ceiling mural. He had painted the walls, the trim on the windows, the damn glass in the window. He painted over the curtains, painted the carpet, painted the sheets and wrinkled comforter on the unmade bed so that, when viewed from the doorway, the effect was beyond photographic. There was a half-full water glass on the nightstand, and a sprout of ice-coated weeds painted on the wall continued on the nightstand and onto the glass. There was a little crack in the glass, and the artist incorporated it into the painting, the fracture becoming a glint of sunlight off an ice-covered leaf. The effect was too much. It gave me a heaviness in my gut,
like the first time I saw a skyscraper when I was a kid. Picasso could not have done this, not if he had a lifetime to devote to it. Step on that carpet and disturb the texture, or brush against the comforter and the effect would be ruined. Whoa, just whoa. I don't know how long I stood there, absorbing it, overwhelmed by the details. There's a deer, complete with little hoof prints in the snow, a happy little cabin, the family in the yard. As I took in these little details, my amazement began to sour, congealing into a cold dread. The cabin on the mountainside, that's not a little tree out front. It's a makeshift cross with a man hanging from it. His legs have been cut off. The woman standing next to it? Look at the infant in her arms. It has a single curved horn coming out of its skull. And unfortunately for the old man, the baby still looks hungry. The frozen pond in back. Those aren't reeds sticking up through the ice all across the surface. Those are hands. And that deer? It has a huge cock, making a little trench in the snow behind it. I closed the door, deciding to never open it again. I walked back down the hall toward the living room, past a bathroom, then did a double take, leaning back to look inside. Nothing unusual. The toilet is askew. So? I said out loud. Damn my curiosity. I stepped into the bathroom, saw that the back of the toilet was indeed sitting a good foot away from the wall where it ought to be. The stool was bolted to a square piece of flooring that was no longer neatly covering the square hatch below. I scooted the stool out to the middle of the floor, looked down the hatch. Basement access? This is a trailer, dumbass. Probably just a dope hidey hole down there. The question is whether he kept pooping in this toilet after he disconnected the drain. 2 feet below the hatch was the gravel and dirt surface under the trailer, interrupted by a hole that had been dug into the ground wide enough for a man to drop through. An old well? Wait a second, there's light down there. Did this man get his shovel and just dig himself a trailer basement some weekend? There was a roll-up ladder leading down the hole, the kind some people keep by their bedroom windows in case of fires. Yeah, climb right down there, dumbass. It's not like a man spontaneously exploded just feet from this spot or anything. Go down and be a meal for the infamous Midwestern tunneling explodive air. But John sent me here for a reason. Maybe a retarded reason, knowing John, but I had come this far. I thought about him, thought about spending the rest of my life without him. And a moment later I was sitting on the linoleum floor, dropping my legs down through the hatch. I tried to look down the hole, could only see that, as I thought, there was an open, lit space down there. I grabbed the floor and dropped my body down the mouth of the hole, finding the ladder with my feet. The rungs were slippery with mud, and the dirt stank like mold all around me. As I went down, I was hit with another smell, so strong it seemed to generate its own warmth, sharp and rotten and fecal. The hole went down about twice the length of my body before my feet were hanging in a dim, earthy chamber that seemed big enough to stand in. The stench got stronger, and when I dropped down, my feet splashed in a slimy puddle of Robert Marley shit. I stood straight, kicking crap off my shoes. My head brushed a surprisingly smooth ceiling. The room was almost perfectly round, a diameter about the width of the trailer. The light was coming from one of those camping lanterns on the floor next to the curved wall on my left. An odd, low, rumbly sound emerged from somewhere, seemingly from every direction at once in the round room. I looked around quickly. Shapes on the floor. I stepped over and picked up the lantern, scanned the room, fully expecting to find at least 3 corpses. All I saw was a pile of junk off to one side, including a broken television and what looked like yard compost with something like twigs sticking out here and there. There were a couple of empty jars along the wall near it, faded pickle labels on each. There was something that looked like a long duffel bag lying against the wall on the opposite side. I stepped slowly toward the duffel bag thing, saw with horror that it was something like a huge, fat caterpillar, leathery, and probably 5 feet long. It was segmented, like an earthworm, the end a puckered circle of tiny teeth. I would have run away shrieking like a banshee at that point, but the thing was so over-the-top gross that I was sure it was something he made, a sculpture or whatever. And it wasn't moving, obviously. I would have mentioned that by now. Just to be sure, I stepped forward very slowly and nudged the worm thing with my foot. Nothing. Maybe a novelty pillow of some kind. I watched it for a moment longer and then carefully backed off toward the junk pile. On the way, I took a glance at the walls, wondering if this dirt chamber was going to collapse without supports. Covering the strangely smooth dirt was a clear, wavy substance like glass or ice. I can't tell you what it felt like because I didn't even consider touching it. I glanced nervously at the worm pillow one last time, then stepped back and slipped in something slimy again. A little wet pile of what I thought were sausages. On closer inspection, I saw they were fingers. 4 severed digits, along with strips of flesh and bare bone. They all had an odd misshapen look, as if they were somewhat melted. My windpipe closed. My heart tried to punch through my sternum. I took 2 steps backward, covered my mouth with my hand, and tried to calm myself. Get out, get out, get the fuck out. I took long, slow breaths. I tore my eyes off the mess on the floor and walked to the other side of the room. I arrived at the large pile of random junk, including the gutted television. I was startled to see the TV was on. There was a shot of what looked like a view through somebody's intestines, like when doctors send those little cameras in there. Then the shot changed to a picture of a 20-something guy with long blonde hair who looked vaguely familiar. He was sitting casually in a living room chair, talking to someone off-camera who was referring to him as Todd. The scene flicked again, showing a blurred, uneven first-person shot of a car moving down a residential street. The rumbling stopped. I stood straight, looked around. The worm thing, wasn't it closer to the wall before? Nah. I turned back to the TV setup. I couldn't see a power cord leading up and out of the chamber, but figured maybe there was a car battery or something hidden in there somewhere. I looked closer at the pile of what I had mistaken for twigs and saw it was a sticky collection of some unknown, something. The back of the television had been removed, and a strip of what looked like red seaweed led out of it and into a large dead fish. The gut of the fish had been slit open, and bulging out of it was a pink wet mass of something the size of a basketball, like its innards had swollen to 50 times its normal size. Close to it was an aquarium tank filled with a thick, yellowish substance that could have been slug slime, and at the bottom was a wrinkled grayish mass that could have been a human brain or possibly a meatloaf. I had the awful realization that I was looking at a machine of some kind. And just when I thought nothing here could surprise me, I looked into the television screen and was proven wrong. A trailer, this trailer, was on the screen, small as if being seen from a distance, but getting bigger. The viewer moving closer, somebody's point of view heading this direction. If the feed was live, just a minute away. I turned, stepped forward, fell flat on my face. The lantern crashed to the floor, rolling, sending light and shadow dancing over every surface. It gave me a quick, strobe light view of the huge slug thing I had tripped over, which was now resting under my splayed legs. It had moved out to the center of the room with startling speed. I could feel the thing warmly pulsing and quivering under me, its soft mass giving under my legs. I kicked off it, pushing backward on my ass, saw the thing squish its way after me. The lantern went out, casting me into a darkness broken only by the soft glow of the mutant television and a shaft of yellow light from the bathroom above. I could hear the thing sliming around me, felt it near my face. I stumbled to my feet, slipped in the huge pool of shit in the center of the room, back onto my ass, bouncing my head off the hard ground. I got up on my hands just as a heavy weight, like a canvas bag filled with meat, landed on my chest. The fucking thing had jumped on me, pinned me. 100-pound bag of slime compressing my lungs. I waited for it to bite my face off. A few seconds later, the low, rattly sound resumed. After a long moment, I realized that it had gone to sleep. I gently rolled the snoring creature onto the floor, careful not to wake it. I very quietly stood and jumped halfway up the ladder. In 10 seconds, I had my palms down on the sticky bathroom floor, shoulders brown with what was hopefully mud, pants stained with shit. I decided right then I would leave and go home and watch some TV and drink a thump. I almost pissed myself. It was a faint sound from the other end of the trailer, the kitchen end. I stepped into the hall, expecting to see a flame-shooting vampire, a hybrid squid clown, The devil himself. Nothing. Probably just wind. A micro-earthquake. Sudden termite migration. Thump. A heavy sound. Violent. Adrenaline set my muscles on fire, and like a dumbass, I moved toward the sound. Definitely from the kitchen. In 7 steps, I crossed the Robert Marley estate. My shoes hit linoleum. I looked around for the counter, floor, and appliances. No elves. No gremlins. No nothing. Not yet. Dead silence. I realized I was holding my breath. I realized I was not holding a weapon. I glanced around for something like a knife. Thump. The refrigerator. Thump. No, the freezer section at the top. The little door up there rattled with the sound, like it was bumped. Thump. From the inside. Get out. Get out, David. Go. 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 With one last thump, the freezer door flew open. A round, frosty lump the size of a coffee can tumbled out of the freezer, fell to the floor, rolled to a stop 2 feet away from me. I stared at it, stared into the open, empty freezer, steeled my courage, then turned and ran my ass off. I stomped toward the exit, made it in 3 flying strides. A half second before my hand would have ripped the knob off the front door, I happened to glance out the window and see a sedan parked out there where none had been before. Plain white, but too many antennas. Cop car. Somebody getting out. Fucking Morgan Freeman. He walked toward the front door, 10 feet away from me. I spun around, searching for a back exit. Even if there was one, it would mean stepping over the possessed jar, or whatever had rolled out of the freezer, which was now sitting on the tile, rocking, back and forth, steaming faintly. I saw now the thing was a bundle of duct tape, something wrapped in layer after layer of the stuff. No thanks. I looked back outside. My cop friend was coming this way, pausing to turn and look back over his shoulder at something I couldn't see. What would I say when he came in? I can usually cobble together a pretty good lie if I have a couple of hours to plan. Puck! A hollow snapping sound from the freezer jar. The thing hopped an inch off the floor, and so did I when I heard that sound. It did it again. Jumped higher. Shit! Like something trying to punch its way out from the inside. Snap. Ka-chunk. That's how I spell the sound of a doorknob turning. Morgan was just 2 feet away from me now, on the other side of a door-shaped piece of imitation wood, coming in. I ducked down, looked at the jar now with hope that the leprechaun or demon or whatever jumped out of it would distract the cop from asking the rather obvious question of why the hell I was here after walking out of my interrogation. I braced myself for what was sure to be one of the more awkward moments of my life. The doorknob snapped back into place, released from the other side. I risked a look through the living room window and saw Morgan looking away toward the gravel driveway, and this time saw what he saw. A white van pulling in, parking next to his cruiser. Big logo on the side, Channel 5 News. A guy stepped out of the driver's seat, hauling out a camera and a folded tripod, and a pretty reporter emerged from the passenger side. Not only was I about to be discovered lurking around a restricted crime scene, but my arrest for said offense was about to be broadcast on live television. It would literally be the worst job of secretly sneaking into a restricted area in recorded history. Puck. 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 There was a bulge now on the side of the jar, or whatever it was, strands of duct tape fibers popping out in the center, giving under the strain. All of a sudden, being arrested didn't seem so bad, and I should have ducked outside with my hands raised high in surrender. But fear kept my ass velcroed to the carpet. The jar convulsed, and again I wished I had a weapon, preferably a flamethrower. Outside, I could barely hear cop and reporter having a terse, forced politeness contest. Hi, I'm Kathy Bortz, Channel 5.
All inquiries go through the captain. You've got the number. It's all cleaned up in there anyway. You missed the really good pictures by a few hours.
She may have missed the story, Morgan, but I bet she'd be pleased to capture a live shot of whatever was about to happen to me. Here's exclusive Channel 5 video of a local man having his brain eaten by a winged gremlin. Local gremlin experts warn that... Funt! The jar erupted. Ejaculated. Gave birth in a cloud of stringy tape bits. A shotgun hole blew out from the guts of the can, and a little blur of an object zipped out and bounced off the paneled wall above me. The offspring fell to the carpet, bounced, and landed next to my shoe. A little shiny metal canister the size of a pill bottle, not moving or growling or glowing, just sitting, waiting. I stared, dully, then forced myself to crane my neck up and around to see the scene outside. The cop turned right toward me, gesturing. I threw my head back down out of the way, sat down hard on the carpet with my back against the wall.
He saw you. Did you see the flicker of surprise on his face? He caught a glimpse of your head looking out from the trailer window. Dumbass.
I looked at the little metal vial, scooted back from it. Are those footsteps I hear outside? I raised my foot to kick the vial away, then reconsidered.
You know what's in there, right?
Nope. No idea.
You know Robert had a stash of the shit that infected John.
Faint voices from outside. What part of no comment do you not fucking understand?
Closer than before? And if he had a stash, he couldn't just cram it under his bed. That black shit moves. It has a will, an attitude. It bites.
And then I realized all at once what I had come here for. John led me here,
of course.
When I was on the stuff, the little hit in my bloodstream I got when it attacked my thigh, I could communicate with the dead,
with John.
When it wore off, I could not. My one chance to save him lay inside the bottle, wicked as it apparently was. I picked up the bottle, cold as an ice cube. I found a seam and twisted the top half off, expected black oil to ooze out. Instead, out tumbled two tiny cold pebbles, perfect and black in my palm, like two coal-flavored Tic Tacs. The same stuff, I figured, in convenient capsule form for those who are afraid of needles.
You're afraid of needles.
So, if it had been a hypodermic, you wouldn't have even considered putting it inside you. How convenient. I closed my eyes, steeled myself like the first time I did a shot of whiskey.
It knew. And what is it you're doing, exactly? For all you know, this stuff oozed out of a crashed meteor. You found it in the house of a dead man after following a trail of dead bodies to get here. So go ahead. Put it right in your mouth, dipshit.
I hesitated. Felt an itching in my palm where the capsule sat. I could hear nothing from outside, which fed a little sprout of hope that maybe everybody had just left.
If you do this, there ain't no turning back. Somehow you know that.
I felt the itch again, a crawling sensation on my palm. I looked down and saw the capsule sitting innocently, and then I saw them move, wriggling in my hand like a couple of fat, black maggots. I flung them to the carpet, flailing my hand around like it was on fire. I stumbled to my feet. The things twisted, changed, grew tiny little black limbs. Two flat appendages grew out of one of the capsules, began to twitch, move, flap. A blur now. Wings. The black blob made a terrible insectile fluttering sound against the carpet. Then the tic-tac launched itself at me, a faint dark streak. I didn't realize my mouth was hanging open until that moment, and if I had known, I would have closed it, I assure you. In an instant, the thing was skipping off my tongue and landing as a horrible twitching tickle on the back of my throat. I coughed, hacked, convulsed. The soy sauce insect crawled down my esophagus. I felt its little tingly legs all the way down to my gut. I opened my eyes, looked desperately for the other one, hard to spot on the dark carpet. There. It buzzed. It flew. So fast it vanished from my sight. I clamped my lips shut, slapped my hand over my mouth for good measure. The thing landed on my left cheek, and without thinking, I brought up my other hand and swatted it like a mosquito. Pain. An acidic burn. An iron from the fire jammed into the soft skin under my eye. I suppressed a scream, brought my hand away from my face, and found it bloody. The stab of agony in my cheek became a bright, broad ache that seemed to radiate down to my toes. A pain so big my mind couldn't wrap itself around it. Mixed with a weird, buzzing itch that comes specifically with tearing flesh, the feel of whole nerve endings torn from their roots and tossed aside. I tasted the copper flow of blood in my mouth, felt something moving over there. Oh, son of a motherfuck, the fucking soy sauce is digging a fucking hole into my fucking face! I fell flat on the floor, thrashing and rolling like a seizure. I forgot where I was, who I was. Everything in my mind vaporized like a hydrogen bomb of panic. Oh, this hurts, this hurts, this hurts. I can feel the thing crawling across my teeth now. Oh, shit! My face and shirt were wet and sticky with blood. I felt the second intruder crawl across my tongue and down my throat, felt my stomach wrench with disgust. I heard footsteps just outside the door now,
felt relieved, knew I would throw myself at Officer Freeman and beg him to take me to the emergency room, to pump my stomach, to bring in an exorcist, to call in the Air Force to bomb this whole town into radioactive dust and bury it under 60 feet of concrete. And then, calm. Almost zen.
I again felt that sensation from the police station, the radiating energy pulsing from the chest out like that first swallow of hot, spiked coffee while standing outside in the dead of winter, the soy sauce high. The doorknob began to turn. Morgan was coming. Hell, Morgan was here. I wanted to run, to duck, to act. Frustrating. The body is slow, so slow. And just like that, I was outside my body. Time stopped. It was so easy for me, I almost laughed. Why hadn't I caught on before? I had a full 1.78 seconds before the detective would step through the door. The only reason we would normally perceive that span as being a short amount of time is because the wet mechanism of our bodies simply can't accomplish very much in that span. But a supercomputer can do over a trillion mathematical equations in 1 second. To that machine, 1 second is a lifetime, an eternity. Speed up how much thinking you can do in 2 seconds, and 2 seconds becomes 2 minutes, or 2 hours, or 2 trillion years. 1.74 seconds until confrontation time now. My body and the body of my nemesis frozen in the moment, on opposite sides of the door. He with his hand on the knob, me on my hands and knees in suspended agony. Okay, I needed a plan. I took a moment to mentally step back to assess my situation. Think. You are standing on the thin, cool crust of a gigantic ball of molten rock hurtling through frozen space at 496,105 miles an hour. There are 6, 2, 2, 8, 4, 5, 2, 3, 1, 9, 6, 5, 2, 2, 7, 1, 7, 9, 9, 4, 2, 2, 9, 2, 2, 7, 2, 7, 7, 5, 2, 4, 3, 3, 9, 6, 1, 2, 2, 5, 9, 9, 4, 3, 5, 2, 2, 8, 4, 5, 2, 3, 1, 9, 6, 5, 7, 1, 6, 5, 7, 7, 9, 1, 5, 2, 1, 5, 9, 2, 1, 7, 5, 2, 4, 3, 3, 9, 6, 1, 2, 2, 5, 9, 4, 3, 5, 2, 2, 8, 4, 5, 2, 3, 3, 9, 6, 1, 2, 2, 5, 9, 4, 3, 5, 2, 9, 1, 5, 4, 1, 2, 9, 3, 7, 3, 9, 8, 5, 2, 7, 4, 3, 6, 5, 7, 2, 2,
us. Whether or not you move your right arm now or nod your head or choose to eat Fruity Pebbles or cornflakes next Thursday morning was all decided at the moment the universe crashed into existence 17 billion years ago because of the motion and trajectory of those particles at the first millisecond of physical existence. Thus, it is physically impossible for you to deviate. I never finished this thought. I was no longer in the trailer. Sun. Sand. A desert. Was I dead? I looked around, saw nothing of interest except brown and brown and brown, spanning from horizon to horizon. God's sandbox. What now? I thought of John's ramblings, his first hours on the sauce, saying he kept falling out of the time stream, everything overlapping. I saw movement at my feet, a beetle trundling along in the sand. I figured this might mean something, so I watched it, followed it, as it inched along the desert floor. This went on for approximately 2 hours, the bug heading steadily in one direction. I had begun to form a theory that this beetle was some kind of Indian vision spirit guide meant to lead me to my destiny. Then it stopped. It stayed in one spot for about half an hour, then turned around and began crawling back the other direction. In a blink, I was somewhere else. A chain-link fence, brown, dead grass, people around me, in rags like refugees. This was getting ridiculous. I stood there for a moment, baffled. I remembered John again and was determined to keep my head, to hang on until the stuff wore off. I looked down and saw I was holding a fork, my hands stained with a gray dust, like ash. A little girl approached me. She was deformed, filthy, a good chunk of her face missing, one eye. She studied me, then ran up, kneed me in the groin, and wrenched the fork from my hand. She ran off with it, and when I looked up, white walls. Industrial sounds. Machines. I was in a large building, very clean, and a man stood in front of me wearing a blue uniform, watching a small computer screen on what had to be an assembly line. To my left, I saw a massive red sign that said, No smoking or open flame on the production floor, with a cartoon explosion underneath it. I stepped forward. Noticed the guy had one of those far-side flip calendars next to him. It was badly out of date, the current page a couple of years old. I had to stop this somehow. I felt like I was a swimmer, getting tossed downstream by whitewater rapids.